Morning breath is gross, isn't it? People will read that opening line, it's short, it's a question, they're going, oh, right, but it is a bit engaging, so it's a compelling opening.
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Now, we all hear about internet marketing and how to use the internet to generate new patients and so on and so forth. And part of that discussion usually involves the concept of having a blog. We all know that, you know, Google loves a website that's updated regularly, and a blog is a really useful way of meeting that requirement for Google and their SEO algorithm. What most people struggle with, though, is actually, you know, how to blog, how frequently do I do it, what sort of format do I have, and all those practical kind of things that go into creating a blog that really, really rocks. So in this particular episode, I'm having a conversation with Kate Skolnick. Kate is the founder and CEO of Sane Social Media, and what Kate does, and she's particularly good at, is not just creating blogs, but making them really, really work hard for the business. And what I mean by that is making sure that the blog is distributed and syndicated in lots of really elegant ways in a variety of different places to bring traffic back to the website so that ultimately the website can convert those web visitors into inquiries for the practice. In this conversation, Kate is very, very tactical. She's very practical, and all the tips and tricks that she shares with you are going to be very, very applicable to your practice on Monday. And throughout the podcast, I'm going to suggest that you take the opportunity to sit down, get a notepad out, write some notes that you can, you know, just really implement as soon as you can. Loads and loads of great information. And equally, if you haven't had the opportunity to listen to last week's episode with Howard Foran, I'm going to encourage you to go back and have a listen to it as well, because in that episode, Howard brought 29 years of experience and shared, you know, some really key insights about growing a practice in general. But for this particular episode, we're going to be all about blogging. And without any further ado, here's Kate Skolnick. Kate, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's really good to have you on the show. And of course, we're going to be having a conversation around blogging today, which I know is something that's very near and dear to your heart. But you know, when we go to lots of different marketing things, everyone tells us that, you know, we should have a blog. But I reckon there's quite a lot of dentists wondering why. So in your expert opinion, given that this is what you do for a living, why should small businesses and dentists in particular start thinking about having a blog?
Okay, well, the main problem is that potential clients they're suspicious of new services or providers, they're distrusting of people that they don't know, and they're scared of making a bad choice. So, I mean, the main thing is when you've got potential clients and they don't know you or your business, there is a certain element of trust and, well, an element of fear and suspicion that you need to overcome. And so they want to feel comfortable. You know, their greatest fear is that they will be exploited because they've made a bad choice. And particularly with dentistry, I guess they have another underlying fear is that they might also result in pain. They are concerned about having made a bad choice. So what they want before they buy is to feel understood and to be able to trust the provider and to know that the business is reliable.
So what I'm hearing you say is before a patient comes into the practice, they're going to be doing their online research, and part of that research is getting to understand who it is they're going to be visiting. You know, that whole zero moment of truth study, the Google stuff, where the prospective patient is experiencing the practice before they walk through the door, and the blog helps, you know, meet that need. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they want to feel that they can get to know you to a certain extent. So they do check you out online. Like you say, they go and look for your profile on Facebook or wherever. They look at the posts there, but they also have a good look around your website. So they look at what services you offer, but they also look at the blog so that they can get a feel for what sort of person you are and how reliable you are. And what they're really looking for, although they can't often articulate this consciously, is unconsciously they're saying, does this person understand me? I want to feel understood.
And I guess coming back to that, Kate, from the dentist point of view and the practice owner's point of view, is one of the key things there would be to have a good, clear picture about the ideal patient avatar, the person they're actually trying to attract, and making sure that there's a good mix, a good fit, I should say. So it's a square peg, square hole kind of scenario. So the practice, from the practice's point of view, you're looking to attract the right people to your practice. But from the patient's point of view, they're trying to find the practice that's the right fit for them too.
Yeah, for sure. And you can't really write a good blog that speaks to someone if you're trying to speak to everybody. I mean, you can't articulate someone's pain point and empathize with them unless you have a fairly clear understanding on who it is that you're trying to empathize with.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, cool. So what would be, from your perspective, when you see, because I know you deal with lots and lots of businesses in the blogging space, but what do you see as the most common mistakes that people make when it comes to blogging, apart from the fact trying to be all things to all people, which we've already just discussed? Where do you think people go a little bit awry with their blogging?
One of the biggest mistakes they make is they think that a blog is all about giving practical advice. And I made that mistake years ago. I thought it was all about offering practical solutions to people's problems. And that's really only part of it, because the big thing is that you need to inject a fair amount of emotion, empathy and emotion. That's really the key hook that gets people engaged.
Okay, so rather than having it dry, you know, the top three tips to flossing your teeth, we want to be talking emotionally and connecting with the patient or prospective patient emotionally about some of the challenges or concerns they might be having in their life, and effectively, in a way, framing how dentistry might be the solution to that particular problem, that emotional problem. So understanding that we make our decisions emotionally, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, cool. So again, just coming back to, before we get into the how-tos of blogging, one of the things that, you know, when I go around talking to people, I get asked all the time is, you know, Jesse, I'm writing a blog, but, you know, I kind of do it a bit haphazardly. You know, I've done a few blog posts and then it kind of gathers dust for a little while. Is that a common problem that you see with small businesses, haphazard blogging?
I certainly think it's an easy trap to fall into. It's just, you know, we push these things down on our priority list and it's hard to see a very clear, direct ROI for blogging. But the thing is that it is something that is a marathon, not a sprint. So if you're in there and publishing, whatever your schedule is, just stick to it. So if you're going to publish once a fortnight, that's fine. If you're going to publish once a month, that's fine. But just whatever you decide that you can work with, do that, because it's demonstrating reliability and authenticity to your audience. So if your audience likes your things and knows when you're going to show up and knows that, you know, every second Tuesday at 7 o'clock something goes live, or every Monday at 7 o'clock something goes live, then, you know, your key people will be tuning in then and looking for stuff and wanting it and keen to get it. So if you disappoint them, it's just like unreliability in any other part of your business.
Okay, cool. And you mentioned earlier that the blog was around a bit around positioning, and I guess positioning that a practice owner or the individual dentist as an expert in, you know, one part of, you know, their field. How, on a practical level, do you do that? What's that look like?
If you think that you're trying to appeal to families, then when you position your blog, you're going to be writing more about how the issue that you're discussing relates to families and how it might manifest in those families. Whereas if you're talking about professionals, then you would write a wholly different piece that is about how that issue or that pain point is, you know, manifests itself for the professional, how it comes out, how they feel about that issue as a professional person, you know, going into the office every day. So things have very different impact on different sets of people. And if you can demonstrate that you understand how this issue, like, for example, if you're talking about maybe crooked teeth, you might discuss about, you know, how an Invisalign treatment, how it impacts a family with growing children and how when they get to a certain age it would be appropriate to be assessed for it, that sort of thing. Whereas if you're going to talk about Invisalign with professional people and you're not targeting families, then you might discuss how embarrassing it can be when you laugh and smile and your teeth are crooked and you feel uncomfortable about that sort of stuff. So you're really getting to those underlying issues that your audience feels.
Great. So again, just to reiterate the point, it's coming back to the ideal patient avatar, knowing that in detail, understanding those pain points or points of concern, and really, I guess, discussing those in a way that makes sense to the reader. Okay, one of the things that also comes up a lot is, you know, should I be doing a video blog or audio blog, a podcast like this, or should I be doing a written blog? What's your thoughts around the format of that sort of stuff?
My key thoughts are do what you enjoy and what you think your strengths are. So, you know, if you think that your strengths, if you think that you're better at talking, then do a podcast. If you think you're great on video and you're happy to do that sort of stuff, do a video log, so a vlog. If you're more comfortable with writing, then do a written blog. So really do play to your own strengths. I do think that audio and video in many ways have a greater impact on the audience, because getting to hear how someone sounds and see what they look like, that's a big thing. That, I mean, people tell a lot from your body language, obviously, but even from the tone of your voice and how you speak and how you conduct yourself, we all know it can be quite hard to get across tone in the written language. So if that's not your forte, then either if you're time poor and you've got other areas in your business that you're focusing on, then by all means outsource it to someone who can capture your voice. But, you know, if your forte is more in speaking to people, then have a podcast. You know, do what you think is going to serve you best.
Cool. That's fantastic advice. I really love that, because, you know, one of the challenges that come up, oh, I just don't like writing. And, well, okay, fine, do a video blog or a vlog or do a podcast or, you know, whatever it is that makes sense. So, and again, it's also what you can commit to doing as well. So, if writing 1,000 words is like plucking every hair out of your arm, don't do it, you know, just don't do it.
Although there are also plenty, sorry to interrupt you, there are also plenty of people who write blogs by audio. You know, they decide they're just going to transcribe it and, you know, send it off to be, and then they review it and tweak it and things. Mm. But if that's what works for you, go with what works.
Oh, absolutely. I've done a bit of that myself. I'm much more keen to speak than to write. And I remember on the website, the How to Build a High Performance Practice, that was an audio file before it was ever a written file. And so I remember recording that and sending it off to rev.com. for anyone interested for transcription services, and it came back as an audio file, and obviously it needed to be tweaked and edited a bit, but it was a simpler process for me at least than writing from scratch. So Kate, just on that, because I know you're obviously very expert at writing blogs, and I know that some of the audience members will be saying, look, I understand I need a blog, I get that it's going to help me attract more of the right people to my practice, I get that it's going to help position me as an authority in my field, I know that I need to write to a particular audience, the ideal patient avatar, but candidly, how do you write a blog? What's the structure of a good blog look like? Is there a framework at all?
There is a framework, and there is also a process. So, I mean, I've worked with a lot of writers and I've helped support a lot of writers, and everyone has their own process. But what I would say is if you have a structured process, then you are more likely to be efficient in your writing and to have a better outcome. So what does that look like? Write the headline first. Even if it's not your final headline, know what your main focus of the blog is. So the thing in a headline is it should be very specific about what problem it's going to solve. And it should really only contain one key point. You don't want it rambling on and being really long. You want it to be fairly succinct. We're talking about this. So examples might be 7 health problems only your dentist knows you have, or the shocking truth about morning breath. So, you know, you want to get very clear. And then once you've got that, even if you haven't got those keywords in the exact order, but you know you're going to talk about morning breath, for example, then what you want to do is you want to have your key points, and you want to write a compelling opening that empathizes with the reader on a problem or a difficulty or an opportunity. So, for example, if we're going to go with the shocking truth about morning breath, it might start off with, morning breath is gross, isn't it? So people will read that opening line. It's short. It's a question. They're going, oh, right. But it is a bit engaging. So it's a compelling opening. And so then, you get your headline first, and the second step is write a compelling opening. And then the third step is explain the problem in further detail. So where we might say morning breath is gross, isn't it? We would say something like, everyone gets it, but some of us have a more pronounced version than others. It's embarrassing, unpleasant, and you'd really rather live without it. So you're kind of just expanding on that problem. And then the next step is to transition into the body of the piece by explaining how you'll fix the problem. So you might say something like, so what can you do about it? To find out, we need to take a look at the cause. And then you'd list out the different steps, or so either the different steps, six ways to do whatever, or in this case, you might use subheadings, either with or without numbers. And that might be things like the cause, which is bacteria, and the cure. Well, there isn't a cure, but you can reduce it by these things, by doing these certain things, by cleaning and flossing and visiting your dentist. So you do that in the body of the article, and then you transition to the conclusion, and you consider using a subheading with the conclusion. An example might be, you know, minimizing morning breath. And then you summarize what the reader learned or how they benefited from reading your post. So it might be something like, if you want to reduce morning breath, be meticulous about cleaning and flossing your teeth. The majority of people also produce enough plaque and tartar buildup in 6 months that it needs to be removed. So, you know, you kind of recap and tell them, you know, the summary. And then at the very end, the last couple of sentences, I always like to create a call to action. And someone once explained to me that most of the people that are on the internet cruising around, reading articles, you have to treat them as though they're zombies. And it's true if you think about it. Most of them are kind of half asleep, or they're trying to avoid doing work or whatever. So, you know, if you treat the very end of your article as though you are the person coming along and applying a set of jumper leads to kickstart people into action, then that's a really good way to get people to take action. So you might say, so do you want to sit there and have morning breath tomorrow morning, or do you want to actually take action and talk to your dentist about that now? The choice is up to you.
Okay, lovely. So you that call to action is very specific, it's quite targeted, and it's obviously very direct, really, as a call to action usually is, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. That's the framework and the process of writing a blog. So I've gone, great, thanks, Kate, that's fantastic. I've got my, you know, great headline, I've got my compelling introduction, which, of course, is really important because, as we all know, when we're on the internet, we've got fairly short attention spans, so we need something to grab us early and keep us engaged. But once the blog post is actually written, you know, clearly it goes onto the website. What then? I mean, you know, we write the blog, we publish it. Do we expect us, you know, do we expect our phone to be, you know, ringing off the hook the next day and, you know, be inundated with inquiries about, you know, morning breath? Or is it a more of a slow burn process around that?
Look, I mean, it is a bit of a slow burning process, but it depends on what you're going to do with the article as well. I mean, clearly some of us, and it partly depends on where your business is at in terms of audience and website visitors and whatever other stuff you've got going on in terms of your traffic to the website. But clearly no one wants to be spending however long they spend writing a blog, you know, a couple of hours writing a blog and putting it on the website and just leaving it there. So really, to get the most out of your blog, you need to be going out and talking about it and promoting it in relevant places. So putting it on your Facebook page, putting it in your Twitter feed. And, you know, with Twitter, it's never a great idea to just put something out there once. Put it out there a couple of times today and a couple of times tomorrow or the day after, and have it. Even if you've got a series of blogs on your website, you can talk about, you know, you can promote ones from 6 months ago or from last month, so long as the content's still relevant, of course. But with dentistry, most of the content is probably going to be pretty evergreen. So, I mean, there are clearly, there's technological advances and things. There might be something new that a practice has, you know, we've just got Invisalign or something. But, yeah, go out there and promote it on social media. And if you're in relevant groups in social media, you know, put a note in those groups about your new service or about, you know, how you help people with morning breath.
I can see the phones ringing off the hook now, although the receptionist is going to want to hold the receiver away from themselves. A quick thing, though, just with those groups, I'm guessing, and again, I think I know the answer here, but I guess you'd say that the groups also need to tie in with the ideal patient avatar, right? So there's no point saying, I'm writing this for a corporate, but then posting it into the Canberra Mums Facebook group. It would be a little bit, yeah, contradictory.
Yeah, of course. Of course, you do need to. And, I mean, some things you can put in two different locations like that if you position them well. I mean, if you say, here's my article on morning breath, and, you know, most of us know that our two-year-olds don't have great breath. I mean, that's not a very relevant argument. But, you know, if you can position it for the mums and say, oh, does your husband's breath smell really bad in the mornings? This might be the solution.
Yeah, cool. So again, it's about repurposing the content as much as you can, getting as much mileage out of each blog post and pushing it as far and as wide as you possibly can within the realms of what's appropriate for the audience.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So one of the things, just while we're on repurposing, because perhaps some of the audience won't know about the concept of repurposing, what would, if you could, you just give us a, you know, the Kate Skolnick, you know, 10-second description of what repurposing content means to you?
So repurposing or resyndication or a bit of both?
Both, bit of both.
Okay. Depending on where you're posting, if you're posting on your own site, you can resyndicate in other places. So you can decide that you want to start gathering an audience. For example, you might want to start gathering an audience in Medium. That's probably not the best platform for local businesses, but certainly LinkedIn is another platform where you can put your blog posts. So with social media, I don't recommend putting the same piece out on the different platforms at the same time. But for example, if you had 6 months worth of posts or even a month's worth of posts, you might decide to start publishing one on LinkedIn. So the one from last month goes live on LinkedIn today and a new one goes live today on your website, for example. Now, there's no, as I understand it, whilst I'm not a Google expert, I don't believe Google penalizes you for having the same content in the same place. If you have a spare few minutes, though, it doesn't hurt to change the headline. You know, you can come up with a whole bunch of different headlines on morning breath. It doesn't have to be the shocking truth about morning breath. It could be, you know, how to minimize morning breath. So you could have something similar but slightly different. You could change that feature image so that instead, you know, on your site it's got this feature image, on the other, on LinkedIn it's got another feature image. You can certainly do that, and then you're actually getting a bigger bang for your buck, really. I mean, the time that you've spent, it's going to different audiences and you're getting it syndicated out there.
Okay, fantastic. So just to touch on that, one of the biggest mistakes people make with their blog is to publish it on Monday morning, and then on Monday morning, you know, 8:05, it goes to Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and all of that effort is just expelled in one breath, I suppose, so to speak. And if your audience isn't tuned in at 8:00 on Monday morning or 8:05 on Monday morning, you've missed them, really.
Yep. And you can also, as you say, repurpose stuff. So if you've got written content and you've decided to have it all in writing, you can start recording that. You can start reading that written content, reading it, recording it, and then creating a podcast out of that recording. You can also take the content and turn the same post into a slide share, for example, get a number of images and put the key points. It's I don't know if you know what slide share is. It's part of LinkedIn. Maybe your audience doesn't know. So it's part of LinkedIn, and you can put all these slides in there. It's just like a slide deck on PowerPoint. And so you put your key messages down the bottom. It wouldn't be all the text from the blog, and it would have images in there. So you could turn the same thing into one of those. You've got the same content, different audience, different delivery mechanism, and then you can take that slideshare and you can put it into Facebook as another way of promoting the blog. So, you know, can repurpose content quite a bit like that too.
Yeah, and if you're doing video blogging, you know, you've got the video file, you can extract the audio, you can have the audio transcribed into written, you can have the written turned into the slideshare, as you've just said. So there's so many ways you can slice and dice your content and get, again, the maximum bang for your buck out of it. So, Kate, we've covered a fair bit of territory in a relatively brisk clip, and I know there's been loads and loads of value that you've just delivered there. So anyone listening, I'm just going to get you to go back and listen to all the specific tips and tricks that Kate shared with you and incorporate them into your blogging, because it takes a lot of skill and time and effort to hone these skills, and Kate's been doing this for years. So I'd really encourage you to take the shortcuts that she's just given you and really start to make haste with it. But Kate, if we say, okay, I'm committed to blogging, I'm going to do it regularly, whatever frequency that may mean, whether it's weekly, fortnightly, monthly, whatever it is, and we stick to it, what's the potential outcomes, at least, even if we're not talking about an ROI directly because it just doesn't work that way, what do you see as the potential benefits then for a practice, apart from, you know, getting to know you, like you, trust you sort of stuff? Is it more about, you know, getting the right kind of people? Is it more about getting more people? Where do you think the real benefits of blogging lie for a small business in general and dentists in particular?
Yep. Well, it certainly does do those things that you mentioned. It gets you more of the ideal patients that you're after. I mean, if you're going to position your blog as, you know, this is a practice, the blog that tells people that your practice is an alternative style practice, and maybe you incorporate some alternative processes and things in there, then people are going to understand that's what you are. So when people come and check you out and go, oh, I've heard that Dr. Jesse Green's a great dentist, and they go and look at your site, then the people that are interested in that style of dentistry are going to be more drawn to that. So you are going to attract, I mean, along with word of mouth and other forms of content marketing, you are going to attract the people that you want to attract, those ideal patients. But then there are going to be people out there who go, oh, I don't want an alternative style dentist. I want a different type of dentist, or I want a dentist who specializes in families or specializes in, you know, children or whatever. So if your blog helps you demonstrate that that's your areas of expertise, of interest, and that sort of thing, then you're going to attract more and more of your ideal patients.
Okay, Kate, so we've got a lot of really practical stuff there, and you know, I really think that there's so much stuff people can take away from this particular episode and podcast. But if you were going to say to the audience members, what are the one or two or even three key things, action steps, because we never like to leave people hanging without telling them specifically what to do. This is the call to action, guys, in case you missed it earlier. What would be the one or two or three things that people could do now?
Okay. So firstly, I would think that make a decision about what you want with your content marketing strategy. Are you more comfortable with the idea of writing something, doing a blog? If that's the case, do you want to do pen to paper or finger to keyboard, or do you want to do an audio style one where you just do a riff into a recording and get it transcribed? So work out whether you'd like to do a video blog or a podcast or a blog, and work out, of course, you should have established who your ideal patient is, and then start brainstorming about topics that are the key pain points. And really, although we didn't touch on this, the main thing that we're trying to do is talk to people about hit their 3 a.m. points. So what is it that your ideal client lies awake and thinks about at 3 a.m.? So are they worrying that they have to constantly put their hand in front of their mouth because their teeth are crooked? Are they worrying that their teeth are too yellow and they need to get, you know, some teeth whitening done? You know, what are they worried about their kids and when to take them to get an assessment for orthodontics? Or, you know, are they waking up at 6 a.m. every morning going, oh, my God, my husband's breath is terrible?
I reckon there's a fair chance that's happening around the country. Right, right. And that's my red hot tip.
Think about the pain points of your ideal patients, what's keeping them awake at night, and how you can solve those problems. And those pain points are going to be keys to starting to write out the great headlines.
Okay, cool. So just to reiterate, the first thing would be decide whether you want to use audio, video, or written. Second thing is to be clear about your ideal patient and understanding the challenges that they face. And the third thing you said there was to write about those pain points and really kind of dig into those, you know, 3 a.m. pressure points that you're talking about. Is that basically it?
Yeah, so because they're the key things of interest to your ideal patient.
Absolutely, and remembering it's all about them and not us, so that's cool.
Yep.
Awesome. So, Kate, if people wanted to find out more about you and where you hang out online, they would head across to kateskolnick.com?
Yes, which is probably pretty challenging unless you can spell it. So.
Okay. CateSkolnick.com.
Yes, that's the one. So it's, yeah, Kate with a C, which is challenging, yep, as well as the Skolnick handle.
All right, all good. Kate, look, I just wanted to say thanks so much for taking the time this afternoon to have a chat to all the dentists out there around Australia and around the world. Really appreciate the loads and loads of value you've delivered today, and the practical nature of your tips is just exquisite. So I really love the fact that people can take notes and implement that, you know, straight away. So again, on behalf of all the listeners, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been great to be here.
Okay, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.